Well, hey, good morning. Welcome to Grace River. I'm Paul. I'm the Next Steps pastor here. And so glad that you're with us for the third week of this series, King of the Castle, the last week of this series, King of the Castle. And man, it's a big weekend. It's NFL weekend kicked off. And it was a little rough for the Chiefs on Friday night. I get that. Big game today. The Lions are playing. That's my team. Even bigger game today. Pastor Chris and I face each other in fantasy football. So, I mean, it's like big stakes happening today. Hey, we're really glad that you guys are with us as we wrap up this series, King of the Castle. And what we've been saying, we've been using this throne and talking about how the first week of the series, that for all of us in some way or another, we like to sit over here on the king of on the throne and wear the crown and the kingdom of me. And like, hey, this is, I'm in charge. There's something in us that, whether we each have a little bit of selfishness in us, which we do, or fear or control or pride, where we like to kind of make sure that we are moving in the directions that we want to move, the things that we want to do, the ways that we want to do it. There's a part of us that always lives here, and yet we're called to step off the throne and take down the crown off our head, because that's not our position. It's not our place. And last week, Jonathan Tott gave the message, and he talked about how we instead need to give this crown to the rightful king to give it to God, that he's the one that deserves the throne and the crown, and he can be trusted. He's actually a good king. Jonathan talked last week about how there's all these things that we put on the throne of our life. He had golf clubs up here and kids' sports stuff and finances and all these different things that we place on the throne of our life, and some of those things are even good things, but they don't need to be in the wrong position. They don't need to be in the wrong place. And so we need to take them off the throne, let God be on the throne of our life. And those things can be like these welcome additions at times, right? But they're not, it's really about kind of the place that they are. And the quicker that we understand that and get all that, the better. When we don't get that, we try and control. We put other things on the throne. Let fear and pride and selfishness kind of win the day, because we don't really know what's ahead. We don't know the full picture. Oftentimes, it's like we end up running in circles, right? We're trying to live this life thinking, okay, if I just am in control of this stuff, then maybe like I can kind of do what I want and get where I want and do all the things that I want to do in my life, and I think that I know best. But the truth is, we don't know what's best. And so many times, even in your own life, there's been things that you thought was best. You made a decision. You realized later that wasn't best. But that we actually have a king that's a good king that we can trust. And we need to let him be on the throne of our life, not kind of all these other things that want to take over. And when we kind of are just trying to be the king of the castle, and we saw that in the first week with a guy named King Saul, who kind of had this death grip on the throne and ended up losing it all. Like, when we try to hold on tightly like that, it's like we're just running in circles, getting nowhere fast. 10 years ago, on Memorial Day weekend, we had a house fire. It was actually attached garage fire, and it was my fault. I had an extension cord that I kept connected to an electric charcoal starter, and I had unplugged the electric charcoal starter and plugged in an electric drill, had done some work in my garage and plugged in the extension cord. And then when I went and unplugged the electric drill, I plugged back in the electric charcoal starter without remembering that I'd actually plugged the extension cord into the wall. I went inside of the house, and 15 minutes later, my one son sees smoke coming through the front windows, on the one side of the front windows, and he yells. I go out to the garage. I touch the door handle. It's not hot yet. I open up the door, and there's just flames shooting up the back wall. And I shut the door quickly, told everyone, get out of the house, call 911. I went and I grabbed a fire extinguisher, went back to the garage, tried to spray it, nothing, didn't do anything, shut the door, went outside. Our fire department got there pretty quickly. It caused like about $40,000 worth of damage. It wasn't like incredibly extensive. It was mostly garage, a little bit of the house. But over the next weeks, we had to do all this cleaning and all this inventory for insurance. And so Jennifer and I are out in the garage, like picking through things. I think that was a bike, you know, that kind of stuff. And throwing stuff away and cleaning stuff up. And one day Jennifer was cleaning stuff up and I wasn't there. I was gone. I think I was at work. And she was cleaning things up and she heard a squeak. She thought it was a mouse. And then she thought she felt something in her hair, and she thought, oh my gosh, it's a bat. Now, a mouse or a bat is reason for my wife to decide, like, let's just move. You know, like, that's like, we're done, we're out. So she's freaking out, and she ends up running out into our front yard, and she's running in circles, like waving her hand, like hitting her hair, you know, all this kind of stuff, like screaming. And our 15-year-old son at the time, he comes to the front screen door, and he looks, and he's just watching her, like, run, arms flailing. And then she thinks, because she's hearing the squeaking, like, it's in her sweatshirt. So she turns to our 15-year-old son and yells to him, Max, come out here and take off my shirt. Now, no 15-year-old boy on the planet has ever wanted to hear that from their mother. And he just is like, nope. Like, he just outright refuses. Not, and he said later, he said, why should both of us get rabies? Like, right? Like, so he's watching her run around. He's like, I'm not going out there. And then he says, Mom. And she stops for just a moment. He says, I think it's your shoe. And it was. It was just her shoe. I think for so many of us, when we try to live here as the king of the castle with a crown on our head, we end up just like running around in circles, arms flailing, trying to get things, and we don't know what's best, and we end up stuck, and we end up trying to chase these things that we'll never actually get to the end of. It's like this carrot on a stick that is just always outside of our grasp. Well, if I just get the next thing, then I'll find contentment, then I'll find hope, then I'll find peace, then I'll find joy. And then you get to that place that you thought like that would be the thing that would fulfill you. And then you're like, ah, why is it still something in me? I think we shared this not that long ago, maybe here, I think, in a message. But there was a 60 Minutes interview years ago with Tom Brady after he won like his fourth Super Bowl. And they asked him about it. And like, what was his immediate thought after the Super Bowl? And his immediate thought was, there's got to be more to life than this. Like, here's a guy who had everything. He's like, is that it? And when we try to be in this position and we try to sit on the throne and wear the crown, we ultimately will always end up at that same spot. Is this all there is? There's got to be more to life than this. We end up running in circles. So there's one other step that we need to take that I want to talk about today when it comes to this concept of king of the castle. Not just getting off the throne, not just giving God the crown. And I'll just warn you up front, it's difficult. So when I was in college, my junior year, we had six of us living on campus in these overflow housing that was like double-wide mobile homes, and somehow the college convinced us that this was like privileged housing or something like that. So we lived in this double-wide. And just down the street from us was a small dorm where our arch nemesis, Steve, who was an RA, lived. And right from the very beginning of the semester, we started this prank war back and forth. And so, like, we would do something, then he would do something. And so, like, one night we went out and we jumped the fences at the football stadium. We brought footballs out there. We were kicking field goals. We knew campus safety. It was, like, only a matter of time before they would come. And so we got a Nerf football, and we wrote in permanent marker, property of Steve, whatever his name was. And then when campus safety came, we all split, left the football. He responded by getting some guys, and they came to our double wide, and they took our stairs in the middle of the night and took them and put them on a raft in the middle of the lake, which was pretty good. To which we went and we gathered like 40 crickets, and then we brought them to their dorm room and their dorm floor, and we let them all out in the middle of the night and just like, good luck with that. And it just went on and on, but we were just like, we are never surrender. Like, we're in it to win it. We're going to finish this thing off. And there is something in us, not with maybe prank wars, but like, there's something about that idea of like never surrender, don't quit, don't give up, that we celebrate and that we should celebrate. Like, sometimes we live in a world that doesn't have a lot of grit, that maybe we want to quit easily, and like fight through, finish to the end, never surrender, don't quit. There's something about that, like, we celebrate that in books, we celebrate that in stories. I love what Winston Churchill said in a speech that he gave to the House of Commons in 1940. The House of Commons is like Britain's Congress. And he stood before them as French and British troops were being rescued from Dunkirk and the Nazis were sweeping through France. And he said this in a speech. He says, "We shall not flag or fail. We shall go on to the end. We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and the oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender. We shall never surrender." There's something about that that's so inspiring. I read a book years ago, and maybe you've seen the movie, maybe you read the book, Unbroken. It's the true story of a guy named Louis Zamperini. Louis was an Olympic athlete who ended up going off to war as a fighter pilot and getting shot down in the Pacific. He was then captured by the Japanese and put into a concentration camp. He was a guy who had had a rough upbringing, and his brother had told him when he was younger, "Louis, if you can take it, you can make it." And that's kind of the philosophy that he lived with. Like, if you can take it, you can make it. And so he faced such brutality in this Japanese concentration camp. They found out that he was this kind of star athlete. And the Japanese commander decided to make, like, an example of him. And so he was, like, extra brutal to him. And just day after day, this brutality. But if you can take it, you can make it. And Louis fought through it and survived and made it out. And it's this incredible story of determination and kind of never surrender. And there's power in that kind of story. But what if I told you that there's another message that we hear from the pages of the Bible and from the words of Jesus? Like, what if in God's upside-down kingdom, surrendering is actually a good thing? Now, this seems unnatural, right? Like, we're like, man, I don't know. Like, that feels like defeat. It feels weak. It feels like you're waving the white flag. But there's another kingdom that doesn't always go by the same rules as our world does. And in God's kingdom, we're called to surrender our own kingdom, the kingdom of me, what we've been talking about throughout this series, for his kingdom. And surrender does signal defeat in some ways, but it's the defeat of doing life myself and doing life my way. And if we're honest, our never surrender and kind of doing life our way usually doesn't go that well. We end up like Jennifer, running around, screaming with our hands in the air, running in circles. But in God's kingdom, we're called to surrender our kingdom of me. And surrender signals in God's kingdom ultimate victory. Why? Because we have a good king with a good kingdom. And so whatever he asks us to do is what's best for us. And wherever he asks us to go is where is best for us. We have a good king with a good kingdom. So in Luke 14, it's in the New Testament of the Bible. It's the third book of the New Testament, a biography of Jesus' life. A guy named Luke wrote it. He was a doctor. He kind of gathered all the facts of Jesus' life and kind of put that all together. In Luke chapter 14, he tells the account of Jesus with a whole bunch of people following him. Like, Jesus had been doing some incredible miracles and incredible teachings, and he kind of gathered not only like his closest disciples, his closest followers, but like also just a bunch of people who were curious, a bunch of people who were like, wow, that's some pretty cool stuff. And for some of them, it even was almost more like a magic trick. Like, wow, that's a really cool illusion or magic trick. I want to see another one. And so they're just kind of following Jesus to see the next thing. And if you're somebody who's walked in today and you feel you're kind of like curious, skeptical, you're not really totally on board with stuff yet, you know, you're kind of new to faith, I just want you to know, like, Luke was speaking and Jesus was speaking to people like you and to maybe your story. And what he had to say seemed super offensive and exclusive. And you may feel that too this morning. But I want us to walk through it together. Luke chapter 14, verse 25, it says this. A large crowd was following Jesus, and he turned around and he said to them, "If you want to be my disciple, my follower, my learner, you must, by comparison, hate everyone else. Your father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even your own life. Otherwise, you cannot be my disciple." Wow. Right? Like, you hear that, like, hate, my father and mother, my wife and children, my brothers and sisters, like, you get why there's so much people like following him, and they're like, whoa, wait a second. I got stuff to do at home. Maybe I'll just go back there. Like, I don't know about this. Like, that seems a little bit extreme. Now, I want to tell you that the word that we translate hate doesn't actually mean hate. And for you, you might be going like, whew, because that sounded like really, like, over the top, right? But it's not that far off. See, what it actually means is love a lot less. Now, his point was this, that by comparison, our love for God should be such that it feels like everything else is a lot less. Now, we know from the pages of the Bible that we're called to love our father and mother. We're called to honor them. We're called to love our spouse. We're called to respect our spouse. We're called to love our children and not exasperate them. And children are called to honor their parents and love them. We know from the totality of the Bible that we're called to love our family. So it doesn't mean that we shouldn't love our family. What it's saying is this, that Jesus as the King should have this priority in our life, this high priority, that he's the King and we worship and follow him. And then he takes it up a notch. He says, even your own life. In other words, you need to surrender your kingdom of me to God's kingdom. Like, you must love God in his ways enough that there's no comparison. And I'll just be honest, for me, like, I feel like I fall short of that all the time. Like, even like there's this moment like I want to, and then there's other moments where it's like I want to even. And then in verse 27, he goes, feels like almost even further. He says, and if you do not carry your own cross and follow me, you cannot be my disciple. You cannot be my follower. And listen, the people of that day, they knew what he was talking about. When they saw carry your own cross, they had watched Roman crucifixions. They'd seen the brutality of it. They'd seen the horrors of it. They'd heard the stories. Now, they I don't think were thinking like that means that we actually have to carry a cross and be crucified through a Roman crucifixion. But the imagery was not missed by them. This idea that they needed to lay down their life for him, die to themselves, to say, I'm going to step off of this throne and lay down this crown, and I'm never going to pick it back up again. And then he says this, he's not even done. Verse 31. Or what king would go to war against another king without first sitting down with his counselors to discuss whether his army of 10,000 could defeat the 20,000 soldiers marching against him? And if he can't, he'll send a delegation to discuss terms of peace while the enemy is still far away. So you cannot become my disciple, my follower, without giving up everything you own. And we're like, whoa, wait a second, what? Now, I don't think this passage actually means like you should give up everything you own. Like, hey, let me just sell everything and I'll just live on the streets and hopefully it'll all work out. Like, that's not what it's talking about. But what it is talking about is like that I should love God in such a way that I'm willing to live with open hands with everything I have. With everything I own, with everything I have, it's open-handed. Like, I want to follow God. I'm trusting him. I'm trusting him with my life and whatever he has for me. I want to live open-handed to that. It gives this picture of counting the cost with these armies, right? You got 10,000 versus 20,000. Like, if you got the 10,000, you better have some strategy. You better kind of figure out, like, hey, can we win or not? And if you can't, then you better go and make a treaty before it's too late. So you go early and make that treaty. And what he's saying simply is this, that like a good king would with a battle, you need to count the cost. We hear that and we go like, give up everything, die to myself, love my family a lot less than Jesus. That's too hard. That's too much. And if you feel that tension, like, I get it. And there's even maybe a part of us that wants to go like maybe I'll just settle for like faith light. You know, like go to church every once in a while, give to some good causes every once in a while, serve someplace now and again. But isn't that why you didn't go to church for a while, or why some people around you don't go to church? Because they're like, man, there's a bunch of people that go to church and they're not actually living what they say they believe. It's full of religion, but no real life and relationship. And Jesus calls us to something different. The thing is that we hear all those things and we think we're losing our life in some way. Like that he's calling us to give up every good thing in our life. Like we're waving the white flag for some boring religious life of self-denial. And if that's what you thought, if that's kind of what's concerned you, it makes sense, but I don't think that's what it means. What Jesus asks us seems too hard and too risky unless we know we have a good king with a good kingdom who has your eternal good in mind. Maybe you've been a follower of Jesus for a while, and you know this, that it's not just about knowing, it's not just about head knowledge. Like, you can be the smartest person in the room and not be close to Jesus at all. Like the Pharisees in the New Testament, like they knew the Bible frontwards and backwards, and their hearts were far from him. So it's not just about knowing, it's about like what is happening in my life. And Jesus does more than just invite us. He does more than just kind of call us to this life of kind of following him. But he says, no, I want you to surrender to me as the ultimate king because I'm a good king and I love you and I have good things in mind for you. And so bowing our knee to him doesn't lead to slavery and it doesn't lead to death, but it leads to life. But Jesus doesn't like give us just this like lukewarm opportunity to follow him. And he doesn't say like, would you like to come follow me? Come and see if you want. Die to yourself if you feel like it. Really, it's up to you. No pressure. No, he says, listen, if you really want to experience the life I have for you, it means stepping off the throne, taking off the crown, and then bowing our knee to the true king. In Matthew chapter 10, verse 39, Jesus was speaking, he said this, if you cling to your life, you'll lose it. But if you give up your life for me, you'll find it. And isn't that what we do? We like cling to things somehow we can control them and we can get our way and get our life in the direction we want it to go. And so we cling to these things, kind of holding on, like King Saul in that first week of the series, like he was holding on to this throne and ultimately just to lose it. It reminds me of a song that was written like 10 years ago called Touch the Sky. And in that song, it really, the first verses are all about like us chasing after the crown and chasing after the throne and trying all these things that we're pursuing and coming up short. And then it says this line, find me here at your feet again. Everything I am, reaching out, I surrender. Because I found my life when I laid it down. And that's what happens, that we actually can find our life when we lay it down to the true good king. And that invitation is for every single one of us, no matter what your story and how far you've run from God. And if this is your first time in church or your 100th time in church, like his arms are open wide to you. But he invites you to this life that recognizes him as the king. And if you're freaked out at all about not having some kind of control in all of that, God has given us some control. He's given us a choice to do what's best and right and follow him or not. But he's not going to force you. His arms are open wide to you, but he's not going to force you. There's been a verse in the Bible that has really been the cornerstone behind the scenes in the shadows of this series. It was a guy named Paul who wrote to the church at Galatia, and he said this, my old self has been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. So I live in this earthly body by trusting in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. So this old self, this like me doing life, me sitting on the throne, me wearing the crown, this life has been crucified with Christ. That's the whole like dying to ourself, carrying our cross. He says, no longer I who live, but Jesus living in me. So I live in my body, trusting the Son of God, the one who actually is the king. But that king isn't some evil king. That king loved me and gave himself for me. And so my life isn't to be like Paul with a little Jesus flavor sprinkled on. But it's Jesus living in me, and there's a little bit of Paul flavor that's in there. But it's not some surrender to a dictator. It's not some surrender to an evil king or to a life of misery. It's out of his love for me, which led to his willingness to die for me. He's a good king who has good in mind. So here's the thing. At some point, every single one of us, no matter what your story, no matter how old you are, young you are, how long you've been in church or not been in church, no matter what you've done or not done, every single one of us at some point needs to respond to this call from the good king. There aren't other options. You can choose to run after your own kingdom and the kingdom of me, but I think we know how that's going to go. And some right now, you're like, man, I don't know. That just sounds so hard, so difficult. Like it's asking a lot or whatever it might be. And my hope for you is that this imagery of a throne and a crown would be a reminder to you, would sit there with you. If you're going to chase after all these things and hoping that you'll be the king of the castle and pursuing and pursuing and pursuing, my hope is that 5 or 10 years from now that you'll be brought back to this image of a throne and kneeling before the true king. And my real hope for you is that we could save 5 or 10 years of frustration and heartache and pursuing only to end up at that same spot, but instead to bow our knee to the true king. He invites us in, no matter what our story. We're called to surrender, to choose a life of following the good king. Louis Zamperini, who was in that Japanese concentration camp and finally was able to come home, made it out of the camp. It didn't just all get better the minute he got back to the States. He actually, you know, PTSD and depression and alcoholism, he struggled for some time. And then he had this encounter where he went to a Billy Graham rally and he met Jesus and he surrendered his heart to Jesus. The guy who said, if I can take it, I can make it, bowed his knee to the true king. He ended up actually going to Japan and forgiving those who had been so brutal to him. And he said as he began that life of following Jesus that he finally began to really live. How about you? How will you respond to the king? It's a daily surrender. It's a laying down of our life daily. It's a reminder that I'm not the king, and my only response to a good king is to follow him and to surrender to him. Lay down my life, but it's a good king with a good kingdom. It's me no longer living, but Jesus living in me. Are we living our days as the king of the comfortable? Are we trying to be the king of the castle and the kingdom of me? We can do it, but it won't bring you where you want it to. Real life, a life I know that you won't regret, is when we live our days following and trusting and surrendering to the real king, a good king with a good kingdom who wants to do something great in and through your life. Count the cost. It's dying to ourselves, but it's finding life in the process. We need to get off the throne, put down the crown in the kingdom of me, and instead trust God with the throne, with the crown, surrender to him. But it's more. We're called to kneel before the king. You know, every week, we ask you to take a next step. I have simply one next step for you to think about today. When it comes to this throne, when it comes to the kingdom of me, what do you need to surrender to God today? What do you need to take this position and surrender to him? Maybe It's your life. You've been pursuing and pursuing and pursuing all this stuff on your own, trying to do life on your own, thinking, if I can take it, I can make it. And it's time to give yourself to the King who died for you. For some of us, it's control. It's control of this thing or that family member. For some of us, it's prioritizing of our money. For some of us, it's the weight of a relationship. For somebody here, God has called you to full-time ministry and you've been kind of pushing back, and today's the day you need to surrender that. For some, today needs to be the day that you surrender yourself to Him. What's that thing? That before the King and before the throne, you just simply give to Him and surrender. I'm going to pray, and as I pray, if you've never surrendered yourself to Him, let today be your day. Don't let it be 5 or 10 years from now, after you've run circles again and again and again. Let it be now. Let it be this moment. No matter what your story, no matter how far you've run from Him, His arms are open wide to you. And so I'm going to say a prayer. There's no magic words with this prayer, but if today needs to be your day, if God has been speaking into your heart in this moment, I want to encourage you to simply pray this prayer after me in the quietness of your own heart. Take that step to follow Him. Let's pray together. Heavenly Father, thank You that You're a good King with a good kingdom. Thank You that You love me and care for me. And God, the truth is, I have been trying to be the king of my own castle, the queen of my own castle, for far too long. So today, in this moment, I surrender to You. I confess my sins to You. I acknowledge You as Lord and King. God, rescue me. God, I thank You that in those moments, as I turn my heart to You, that I become Your follower. Help me to follow You the rest of my life. In Jesus' name, amen. If you just made that decision to trust Jesus and to surrender, to bow the knee to Him, I want to encourage you, let us know that. One way that you can do that is to text the number on the screen, text BEGIN to that number. Let us know that you made that decision. Don't keep that to yourself. We're going to sing a song. Why don't you stand with me? That song is the song that I referenced earlier in this message, Touch the Sky. And in that song, it talks about this idea of like chasing and chasing and chasing, and then ending back at that throne, back at His feet again. With everything I am, I surrender. It says, I found my life when I laid it down. For some of you, there's been something that you've been holding on to. Something that you're like, I'll keep this one for me. I'll trust God with this. I'll trust God with that. But there's been some stuff that you're holding on. Would you, in this moment as we worship, would you take this as a holy moment for you to simply give that to Him? To bow your knee before that throne and give Him that thing as the Lord and the King. Let's sing together. Down my life, surrender. But listen, we have a good king with a good kingdom. And so my hope is that not only does it feel hard, but that it feels like there's hope. You don't have to do life alone. You don't have to be in it on your own. You have a good king who loves you, who wants to walk with you. There is hope and there is life and there is joy and there is peace as we surrender. He's a good king. And my hope is that you'll experience that in maybe a really fresh way this week. Hey, I want to thank you so much for being here today. I want to let you know about just a couple things. 2 weeks from now, we have our fall kickoff, September 21. You'll get some invites on the way out. Invite somebody to come along with you. It's going to be an incredible morning. Have a great day today. Thank you so much for your faithful giving. Everything that happens here happens because of your generosity. Have a great week. I'll see you next week.